from the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois. This is the closing market report. It is the 8th day of February, 2013, USDA Report Day. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about this morning's USDA reports with Mike Zuzlow. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting in Lafayette, Indiana. Daryl Good, ag economist from the U of I, will have his take on the reports from this morning, and we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bruce Bostard of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. As we close out the program, we'll take a look at what's been happening in the agricultural weather forecast right here in the state of Illinois with state climatologist Jim Angel. It all happens during this closing market report for a Friday afternoon. Don't forget to call in for your tickets for our all-day agricultural outlook. That one's scheduled for the 5th day of March. It's a Tuesday. Tickets are $25. Call in now at 217-333-7300.
Support for today's broadcast comes from ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at adm.com/farmerview.
Checking the numbers in Chicago as they finished up on a Friday afternoon. Futures like this in the wheat pit. March contract for the soft red up 2 cents at 7.58. That's a close, not a settlement price, as the rest of these are. May futures at 7.62, down a penny, and July at 7.62 and a half, down one, are meaning they're all closes and not settlement prices. The hard red at 8.19 and three quarters, down 8 3/4 in Kansas City. From the corn pit back in Chicago at the CME Croup, 2 1/4 lower on its close at 7.08. and a half. The May at 7.08 and a half as well. It was down 3.5 cents. In July, futures at $7.25 a bushel, down a penny and a half. September, $5.86, down 3 1/4. December futures at 5.63 and a half, down 3. And the March corn at 5.73 3/4, down 3.5 cents for next year. The May at 5.81 and a half, down 3. March soybeans, 14.51, 35 3/4 of a cent lower. May futures, 14.42 and a half, down 30 3/4. In July, beans at 14.26, down 36 1/4. August soybeans, 13.88, down 43 1/2. And November's at $12.86 1/4, down 37 3/4. January futures at $12.87 1/4, down 40 3/4. Bean meal futures on the afternoon at 422.50, down $15.10. Bean oil at 51.45, down 40 cents. Live cattle futures in the April at $130, 12.5 cents, up $1.40, rather down $1.40. April feeders at 148.20, down 237.5, and lean hogs finished at 86.12.5, and the apes at 40 lower for the day. You're listening, of course, to the closing market report. It comes to you from Illinois Public Media. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures March contract $95.69 a barrel, down 14 cents. The RBOB gasoline or wholesale price at $3.06. That's just about 6 cents higher. Ethanol at $2.40 9/10 of a cent, a tenth of a cent higher. The spread between the two is now 65 1/10 of a cent. That's 5 9/10 wider than it was yesterday, and the widest number I have seen for that spread since we started tracking it in August of last year. March contract at $3.27 4/10. That's down a penny and a tenth. And the heating oil or diesel fuel at $3.23 9/10, up 4 cents for the day. Gold futures at $1,666.20, down $4.40, and the U.S. dollar at 80.24. That's up 5 4/10. Let's take a look at what you can do in the next 30 minutes or so if you'd like. Just give us a call here at the radio station, 217-333-7300. If you'd like to get your tickets booked for our all-day agricultural outlook, it is the 5th day of March at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. Special guests that day include John Bondurant of Bondurant Futures out of Memphis, Tennessee, Murray Wise of Murray Wise & Associates from right here in town, and of course out of Florida as well. And then Nick Anderson, he's with the Illinois Livestock Development Group, and Peter Goldsmith with University of Illinois. Nick and Peter will be talking about livestock and your potential to be involved in that marketplace. We'll take, of course, a look at the land values with Murray Wise. And John Bondurant will talk about the changing view from the southern part of the United States as it relates to agriculture and their shift, of course, to more corn and soybeans and away from cotton. All that comes up on the 5th day of March. Get your tickets now by calling the radio station. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. This is the eighth day of February 2013. It's USDA Report Day. On the phone line with us today, from Lafayette, Indiana, Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting, is Mike Zuzulo. Good afternoon to you, Mike.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Can you go through the numbers USDA released that you thought were important out of the world agricultural and supply demand estimates today?
Well, the corn ending stocks for the United States at 632 was a bit above the average trade guess, but I think because of the price break we had seen earlier in the week, Todd, that was probably maybe built in already. At least like a 625 carryover probably is what was built in because of the 20-cent plus break we had seen going into today's report. U.S. bean carryover number, probably the one that got the most attention by the trade, 125 million bushels. Not bad on the lower end of the spectrum, but the exports were unchanged in between that and the Brazilian bean crop going up. I think that probably signaled to the trade that if you take those exports being unchanged at face value as a trade as a whole, you're probably sitting with the mindset that we're going to see a massive shift in origin in the next 30 to 45 days. U.S. wheat ending stocks, probably the most favorable number at face value, under 700 million bushels. That puts us about 50 million bushels less than last year at this time. And with the weather that we're dealing with, I think the trade probably respected that number. The trade was probably also expecting a bigger ending stocks number versus the January forecast, because of weaker demand on the export front. They did not get that. So a couple different reasons why maybe the wheat number was a little bit more positive than the corn or beans.
So the trade took the soybeans and they said, well, we're going to have fewer ending stocks, but oh, by the way, South America is not as bad as you think it is, at least if you combine both Brazil and Argentina. And
right.
In Chicago, they said, that probably means we'll be short of beans here, but that won't matter because all the export business will switch origin and head towards the south.
That's right, and I think this is where the meal chart in particular and the meal price in particular probably plays a much bigger role than we first think about when it comes to the relationship between meal and corn. And it was interesting because the March meal chart, after making a new two-month high earlier in the session, ended up going down to the 20, the 50, and the 200-day moving average in the March contract. All of those moving averages within $2 of one another, very odd occurrence whenever moving averages of that type and that spread get that close to one another. So I would call this technically a very big inflection point for the technicians out there. A very wide array of charts also say, because we're back to where we were at the beginning of the year and have lost traction and are essentially back to where we were on January 1 in many, many technical ways, this is also a point where it's a very big inflection point, meaning it's something where the technicians are going to become very, very concerned if these losses are added to. But clearly what you say is right. The market had been buying beans at the expense of corn and wheat. They made a major shift out of that after today's numbers.
Can you stay with the meal chart for just a second? Because it is a big outside down, and it's only a day, but it is a sharp down day in that lead option meal chart or the March contract. And it did, as you mentioned, break all of those moving averages and settled below the 20-day, just slightly, but about a dime below the 20-day moving average.
Yeah, and this is where the 200-day comes into play, because you look at a 200-day moving average, and if you were looking at other times when we have gone through the 200-day moving average, if you take out the first of the year, January 2nd to be precise, you have to go all the way back to the middle, later part of February of last year, and that's where when we were at a price of about $335 to $340 a ton. So we were about $80 a ton cheaper than we are right now. This is where, for the beans, for me, they have a lot more downside potential than the wheat and corn, because we have been talking about for 4 years straight, I think it's been, Todd, about an 80 million metric ton Brazilian bean crop. We've never gotten there because Mother Nature's never let us. It looks as though we're going to get it this time, and I just don't think we're ready to deal with that kind of number as a global market, and that's where it becomes an issue, where maybe beans are starting to tell us that they're going to become the leader to the downside. It's a big if, because what you talked about a minute ago about the origin shifting is a big if. Do you buy the USDA export number today, or not. I say the trade probably will right now, but 10 days from now, if you don't see lower exports and cancellations reappear, you're probably going to have to revisit this, and you have the front end once again being a very strong leader to the upside again. So, you, like I said, these charts are depicting a fundamental inflection point.
If you are correct in your assumption that this signals a shift to the downside, or potentially does, I suppose.
Right.
And it would have the trade caught off guard substantially because most, I think, have been looking for soybeans to lead the market higher.
I think that's 100% right, but that makes sense from a standpoint of what we've dealt with the last month and a half. The funds that are trading these markets are not the long-only funds. They're the managed money. They're shorter-term in nature, more technical in nature, trading more headline news. And so, yes, you have greater volatility and you have greater whipsaw price action and stronger short-term trends. But that's exactly my point in the medium term. I did a study of the last 5 years on a monthly close. Where can you expect Dease corn and no beans to get to? 9 out of 60 months, you could get November beans above $14. So when we were trading above $13.50, we were on the very long end of the curve. It takes a lot to get November beans above $14. Dease corn, however, when you're talking about $5.80 or $6, you can get that 19 or 20 months out of the last 5 years on a closing monthly basis. And so this is why I feel like if I don't hedge corn here and the beans lead the corn lower, I'm playing the odds and statistics better. Plus, I just quite frankly don't think there's as much downside between now and harvest in corn as there is in beans, because we've been trading this demand and this U.S. demand of beans and not the world numbers and not South America.
Okay, so you're not going to take any position or new position on new crop corn, right?
We lose the double bottom in wheat, that is absolutely right.
Okay, and then in soybeans, did the USDA's report in the action today cause you to think about new crop sales there?
Well, I've been up to about 50% of insured bushels at this stage with clients and working towards 100% of insured bushels. With today's drop, I'm going to call the dogs off and wait to see if 1250, 1245 support holds. That's a number that's very key because it takes a lot to get us below 1245 on a weekly close in November futures. If you see that, then you're probably going down to the 200-day moving average just under $12, and that's where it gets really, really tough to rebuild the chart and rebuild the sentiment. So below 1245, you bet I'll start hedging again.
USDA for the corn numbers, and I don't think this would have been a big surprise to anybody, dropped exports by 50 million to 900 million for the year for corn. But they held pretty steady with usage by livestock.
Yeah, exactly. And this was a favorable number in that respect. And also, like I said, the price action to the downside earlier in the week. The biggest potential sleeper in this market for corn, as far as if you're a bullish trader, is that the USDA acknowledges problems in Argentina, and we have to acknowledge those problems are ongoing because the weather hasn't cleared up down there. So you are really open, and you can talk about Brazilian corn going up, but that just doesn't come to the market in a timely fashion, so it's kind of off the table till May, June. So if you've got an issue in Argentine corn, I think you've got an issue with the United States and the corn market being tighter than maybe the market's expecting it to be in 20, 30, 45 days.
Anything else to add before I let you go?
Something I think that'll do it. Have a great weekend,
hey,
sir.
You too. Thanks so much. That's Mike Zuzulo. He's with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Lafayette, Indiana, and joins us here on the Closing Market Report for this Friday afternoon.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit of Illinois, offering financial products and services specifically for the agriculture industry, including farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing, as well as farm cash management solutions.
Want to avoid the long registration lines at our 24th annual All-Day Ag Outlook meeting? Call 217-333-7300 and order your tickets now for the March 5th event at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. They're $25, along with a continental breakfast and Beef House lunch. You'll hear special presentations on farmland values for 2013, diversifying your operations with livestock, the changing nature of the southern U.S. farm, and, of course, our money making soybean, corn, and cash grain panels. Call 217-333-7300 with your major credit card, and we'll mail your tickets right out to you. The day of the event, walk in through our VIP entrance.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
This is the closing market report for a Friday afternoon. I'm Yovai Extension's Todd Gleason. Today, USDA released the monthly world agricultural supply and demand estimates. Daryl Good, ag economist from the U of I, is here to go through the numbers with us. Thanks, Daryl, for taking the time. Let's go through just simply the raw numbers to begin with. What did they show?
Well, if we look at this kind of commodity by commodity, first at corn, on the domestic balance sheet, USDA did lower their projection of exports by 50 million bushels to a remarkably low 900 million bushels for the marketing year. That was partially offset by a 20 million bushel increase in the projection of processing use of corn for starch and sweeteners. So bottom line, raised the projection of year-ending stocks by 30 million bushels and lowered the price projection for the year by 20 cents per bushel. On a world basis, we did see a slightly smaller production forecast for Argentina, offset by a larger forecast for Brazil. So South America was kind of a wash in that report. Soybeans increased the projection of domestic crush for the current year by 10 million bushels and lopped that off of the projection of year-ending stocks. On a world basis, again, a slightly lower projection for Argentina, completely offset by a larger number for Brazil. So once again, South America, in this report at least, was kind of a wash from a supply standpoint. We did see a bump up in the forecast of wheat feeding for the year that ends at the end of May this year, a 25 million bushel increase, but that was offset by a similar decrease in the forecast of sorghum feeding. And then finally, we did see larger numbers for soybean oil and meal exports and a larger forecast of domestic meal feeding. So not large changes, but a fair number of changes from last month. And I think the story for U.S. crops is a very strong feed demand, very poor export demand for corn, and continued very robust demand for soybeans and soybean products.
There were some subtle messages you believe to be in the report, and they dealt with some of the things you just mentioned, feed demand in particular, and domestic usage.
Yes, I think the reason that USDA increased wheat feeding and lowered sorghum feeding wasn't readily explained in the report, but the fact that total grain feeding was maintained with a slight increase in the projection of domestic soybean meal feeding and suggests that feed demand is remaining quite strong, and that's supported when we look at ongoing estimates of livestock inventories. Those numbers, except for cattle on feed, just have not shown much year-over-year decline. So I think, taken together, it suggests that the March 1 grain stocks report could be quite interesting in terms of what it reveals about our domestic feed demand for all grains.
And so what does it all mean for the price of new crop corn and maybe soybeans? I talked to Daryl Good about that as well. He's not in the camp, as many analysts are, that suggest it might be a little more bullish over time. He's been long in the thinking that prices will go lower, and here's his commentary there.
Well, I think it's a questionable judgment at this point. First, looking at the acreage number, I think everything suggests we should at least maintain corn acres at the level we planted last year, which means with more normal weather, we would harvest 3 to 4 million acres more than we harvested in 2012. Whether we see much of an increase, I think, is still up for question, because when we look at, for example, the ratio of corn to soybean prices, new crop, corn has lost quite a bit of its advantage over the last month. Those prices, new crop corn prices, have come down faster than new crop soybean prices. So it'd be interesting to see how farmers judge the relative profitability going into the planting season. But I think you're correct that the biggest factor is what kind of yield can we expect for corn in 2013? And specifically, what should we think about the implications, yield implications, of the current dryness in parts of the Western Corn Belt and extending particularly into the Plain States? And you know, I think we would all, from a production standpoint, be happier if we were fully recharged at this juncture, or fully recharged going into the planting season would make us more comfortable about yield prospects. But I think history teaches us pretty clearly that yields will be determined by weather conditions going forward, not current soil moisture conditions. Certainly if moisture levels continue to be below average through the planting and early part of the growing season, then we start becoming legitimately concerned about yield potential. But I think at this juncture, we should still think that there's opportunity for moisture levels to improve through the spring and into the summer that could still give us near trend yield for corn in 2013. And that's kind of my default expectation until proven differently at this point.
That's Darrell Good, ag economist at the University of Illinois.
Agricultural market reports on WILL are made possible with support from Busey. Small business is the next big business. So Busey offers solutions to fit growing business needs, from customizable lending options to succession planning. Busey, your dream, our promise.
Let's check the Friday afternoon cash grain market. Bruce Bostard at the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois, is on the phone line with us. Hi, Bruce. How are you?
Good.
Well, farmers had a chance to take a look at the numbers USDA released today about the old crop, and it dropped a couple of things down. Should have turned things maybe more friendly, but the markets went lower on the soybeans. Did it surprise you at all?
It's a good thing I wasn't betting on this report, because if I'd bet it on any surprise, it probably would have been a friendly surprise on soybeans.
Absolutely.
And so much for that. although, really, you look at the report, and I think the report was probably about as much of a non-event as you can get. Everything was very much in line with expectations. I think we probably did more in line with weather forecasts than on the crop report today.
So tell me about that. Just more rainfall across the United States?
Chances for rainfall in the United States, maybe some improving weather prospects in some of the South American areas. And again, no surprise that the reports come, the reports go, and what really is a driving factor is the weather forecast.
I know you keep your pulse on what's happening in basis. Can you tell me about the Gulf at this time?
It lost ground on corn earlier this week. Things have been quiet the last few days. On soybeans, it'll be interesting to see. There was a lot of cash grain that moved over the last week or two, but you take some downticks on the board, that means the basis might have to pick up a little bit of the work again.
And there are expectation that it will truly do that?
We probably have some short-term where it doesn't have to, but if you don't keep feeding it, then I think we'll see the basis start to pick its head back up.
And for corn?
Corn, it's just hard. There's not, doesn't seem to be all that much nearby interest on corn. Processors seem to have bought enough in the last couple weeks, and there's not a whole lot of incentive to chase it out forward yet.
Your bids for the dime.
We are 723 on nearby and 1470 on soybeans.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Bruce Bostard is with the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report on this Friday afternoon. I'll be back in just a couple of minutes. We'll take a look at the agricultural weather forecast. State climatologist Jim Angel will join us on Illinois Public Media.
It's National Molasses Bar Day. Up until the 1880s, molasses was the most popular sweetener in the U.S. because it was much cheaper than refined sugar. But by 1919, U.S. per capita consumption of white sugar was twice what it was in 1880, with most Americans completely switching from molasses to granulated white and brown sugar. By the way, in January of 1919, a huge vat of molasses at the Purity Distilling Company in Boston exploded. What came to be known as the Great Molasses Flood killed 21 people and spilled 2 million gallons of molasses into the streets. On this day in agricultural history in 1802, Simpson Grafton of Massachusetts patented what he called an 8-day improved timepiece, better known as the banjo clock, a small inexpensive clock which could be purchased by those without means in the New World. In 1878, Ellis Fries died, a Swedish botanist. He developed the first system used to classify fungi. In 1886, Wilhelm Koppers was born. This cultural anthropologist developed theories on the origins of society based on studies of hunter-gatherer tribes. And that's this day in agricultural history.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
This is the closing market report on a Friday afternoon. On the phone line with us, Jim Angel at the Illinois State Water Survey, the Prairie Research Institute. He's the climatologist for the state to take a look at the weather forecast. Hi, Jim. How are you today?
Good afternoon, Todd.
We've had a lot of rain over the past several days, and looks like we might get some more rain over the weekend.
That's right. If we look at the forecast for rain, there's another chance coming on Sunday and Sunday night. There's 8% chance on Sunday and another 40% on Sunday night. The amounts don't look too impressive, maybe another quarter of an inch or so, but every little bit helps at this point. Highs on Saturday will be 43 and on Sunday 51, so it will be falling as rain rather than snow. And you get on into next week, high on Monday is 42, and on Tuesday 36, and Wednesday 38, and Thursday 44. So still very warm temperatures, cold at night, lows in the mid-20s, but some warm-up during the day and a fair amount of sunshine.
We're moving, halfway through the winter of 2012-13. How are we setting up at this point for the springtime, and has the rain, rather than the snow, managed to help alleviate parts of the drought?
That's right. That certainly the rain has helped. You know, we've had a lack of snow, especially in the northern two-thirds of Illinois. In fact, we've had here in Champaign about 4 inches total so far. But we've made up for it with rainfall. So that's been great news. We got additional rains just this week. Now, the only tricky part is in the northern third of the state up around I-80 and northward, the soils are still frozen, so not all that water has been able to make its way into the soil sitting on top at this point. But the rest of the state has done a pretty good job on recharging that soil moisture over the last couple of weeks. In fact, I even saw some water staying in fields earlier today.
That surprised you that we're in this position now or not?
Somewhat. I was hoping we would be this far along, but I think we've done a good job, especially in the southern half of the state, has really caught up from the deficits that we saw in 2012. I'm still kind of hoping that we can make some farther progress in the northern third of the state once those soils do thaw out and get a chance to recharge some of that soil moisture.
And then if you look broadly across the United States, and I know you're the state climatologist, but I'm sure you look broadly across the U.S., Midwest in particular, parts of Iowa, Nebraska, maybe Minnesota, still suffering greatly.
That's right. The U.S. Drought Monitor has this large swath of very extreme conditions, very drought conditions across Texas all the way up to the Dakotas. So pretty much the states to the west of us right now still have major problems with drought, and that's expected to continue at least for the next couple of months. I think the upper Midwest, kind of Minnesota, Wisconsin area, is expected to get some more rains in the next few weeks. But I think it's going to be a tough time for 2013 out west.
Hey, thanks so much.
You're welcome.
That is Jim Angel, state climatologist at the Illinois State Water Survey. Wraps up this edition of the Closing Market Report. Be sure to visit willag.org. Our guest this week on Commodity Week, Dr. Michael Cordonnier, will, of course, talk about South American crops.
Support for today's broadcast comes from ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. available at adm.com/farmerview.